Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. In our second episode, we are again reviewing the Cricket World Cup that's on the go in England at the moment. And our special guest from the first episode is once again chatting to us from the UK. And in part two, we'll chat to one of the best rugby skills coaches in the country about the fascinating debate regarding Springbok centres Lukanyo Am and Jesse Creel. We'll also hear from Jesse Creel himself. We have loads to unpack, so let's get into it. Right, the Proteas faced the West Indies in Southampton in a do-or-die clash on Monday, and we'll get deep into that conversation once we chat to sports journalist Daniel Gallen, whom we said we'll cross to in just a second. Thembi Kgatlana scored a wonder goal as Banyana Banyana ran Spain very, very close in their opening FIFA Women's World Cup match, but unfortunately they eventually went down 3-1, no thanks to two VAR decisions. In Comrades Marathon, Gerda Steyn, or is it Gerda Steyn? My apologies, Gerda. She smashed the women's record in the Comrades Marathon last Saturday, becoming the first woman to finish in under 6 hours with a time of 5 hours 58 minutes and 53 seconds. The previous record was held by Elena Negolieva, which was 6 hours 9 minutes and 24 seconds. The Bafana Bafana Africa Cup of Nations squad was also named last Sunday, but we will get into that conversation a little bit later on as this podcast develops with Tiso Blackstar digital sports journalist Mark Stratum in the coming weeks as we build up to the AFCON tournament in Egypt starting on the 21st of June. For these and other stories, as well as up-to-date sports content, go to timeslive.co.za. Welcome again to the Sports Live podcast. Daniel Gallen, again, our special guest. Last week, we had bad news, the Proteas having lost to Bangladesh. You were fresh off that. This week, I kind of feel like a slightly even worse, a rained out fixture in Southampton against the West Indies. Mind you, we were already two down with the Proteas on 29 with Amla back in the hut, as well as Aidan Markram. Daniel, you seem to be suffering through this Proteas World Cup. I know it's your first World Cup as a journalist, but it seems to the Proteas that this is par for the course. And it seems like all the signs are pointing to the exit mate. What is your call?
Well, thanks for having me on the show again. Before I get into the Proteas, I want to, you know, say that despite the on-field failures, this is still like the dream job. So the last thing I want to do is complain. There were people in the press box complaining that the chicken was bland. And I just thought, you know what? We're getting paid to travel around the country. We get free lunches. We got tea and coffee on tap, and we get to watch cricket and talk about it. Yeah, it's not going according to plan, but this is still amazing. So no complaints on that front. But now with that caveat out of the way, as you say, everything that could have gone wrong for the Proteas has gone wrong. They haven't been good on the field. Off-field distractions in the form of AB de Villiers and disputes over the domestic restructuring between Cricket South Africa and the Cricketers Association. It's all weighing on their minds. And Kagiso Rabada said as much yesterday. He said that it's hard to focus on one's game when there are so many off-field distractions. And they're talking over each other, especially with the AB de Villiers scandal, if I can call it a scandal. Faf du Plessis and Otis Gibson have conflicting accounts of when de Villiers reached out, who he reached out to initially. Was it during the IPL? Was it the night before the squad announcement? So it's all a bit of a mess. I mean, Faf du Plessis had to come out today after the press conference and assure us that him and AB are still friends, as if this was some soap opera that was unfolding. And it just feels a bit amateurish in light of what is supposed to be the most important cricket match, or rather cricket tournament of these guys' lives. South Africa 29 for 2 after 7.3 overs. I think only the Bangladesh game was the only match where the Proteas were two down with over 100 runs on the board. So clearly there's some problems at the top of the order. You know, you look at the way England's top order and India's top order are going. Just some problems with South Africa, but I think they'll take the point.
Yeah, I think they'll take anything at this moment. Have you done your maths yet? It seems like we're in that scenario that we're too familiar with the Proteas, especially after 2003, where the calculators are out.
Yeah, well, I think they needed to have won this game and the remaining five for it to be absolutely in their hands. I mean, I think they can win the next five and still not qualify. Although I think winning the next five, they are more likely to qualify than not qualify, if that makes sense. So, but results have to go their way now. There are going to be games that are going to be rained off for the coming weeks. I think the forecast, I think it's the storm that has come from Spain. His name's Miguel, Storm Miguel, something like that. I may be wrong. Anyway, just another example of some European storm raining over Britain, as some of the right wing nut jobs might see it in this country. But it's not in the Proteas' hands anymore. But as Pap du Plessis says, win your games and let the rest take care of itself. But they have to beat Afghanistan. I mean, if they don't beat Afghanistan on Saturday, then just pack your bags, mates. Bring some other guys over.
I'm saddened to think that it's come to this. You have to beat Afghanistan. You know, I don't see, even if the match had gone its full course, you look at how Sheldon Cottrell was bowling very early on. You look at how tentative the South African batsmen were and how just out of nick and badly out of confidence they were. The rain might have even stopped a humiliation at the hands of the Windies. What is it about this year's tournament that has gone so terribly awry?
Well, it's interesting you talk about this game because, look, it was a good toss to win. I think both sides were certainly going to put the other side into bat. It was difficult. With the ball was moving around, overhead conditions weren't helpful. But you're right. There's something awry, and we put it to Dale Benkenstein, the South African batting coach, and we said, "What is it? You know, just like plainly, like what's going on with the batting?" And he said that, well, he intimated that it was psychological, that there was some sort of mental barrier, and that's comforting in the sense that it isn't technical, because what he's saying is that these are good players and they haven't stopped being good players. That in the nets they look like they're in good touch and they're hitting the ball well. But it's also worrying in the sense that if it's this abstract concept that they can't put their finger on and they can't say, well, why are these household names? Hashim Amla is one of the greatest batsmen that has ever played the game. I mean, he could be considered one of the all-time greats in ODI cricket. Aidan Markram has been touted by anyone with an opinion who matters in South African cricket to be a future star in the making. So for the batting coach to say that he's not sure why they're not clicking and that it's perhaps something that is abstract as mental, well, that worries me because I'm not saying that, you know, this is a sport, so let's get some perspective. I'm not saying that we need to string these guys up in the street and flog them. I'm not saying that Dale Benkenstein needs to be retrenched and never work in cricket. But when your batting coach can't say, well, this is the reason why, that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, it worries me a bit. but I'm here in a very safe environment in South Africa. You are very much at the scene of the car crash or train smash up there in the UK. I just want to wrap our chat off by really getting to the nub of the AB de Villiers issue. Did it have as much of an impact as a lot of us perceived it to have from down here in South Africa? And I know you spoke about the conflicting report back from the team, where the coach says one thing and the captain says another. But is it something that really should have warranted A, this much attention, B, would it have been an issue, say, if South Africa had won 3 out of 3? And really, what do you think was the plan then, if something such as a de Villiers phone call can throw an entire World Cup campaign into disarray? What was the eventual plan coming into this World Cup? If guys can't say to each other, remember the plan, remember the strategy, and that doesn't change regardless of AB de Villiers.
Sure. Okay. Quite a bit there. So the plan looks like, I'll work backwards. So the plan was always we're going to come here with an aggressive fast bowling attack. That obviously went by the wayside when Dale Steyn pulled up and Lungi Ngidi has been unavailable for these last three games. Bob Du Plessis admitted, or was it Otis Gibson? One of them admitted that they were aware that this AB de Villiers story might break at some point during the World Cup. So they knew that it might break. Obviously, they were hoping that it wasn't going to, but I'm sure would have had some sort of plan for the eventuality if it did. And obviously, it has. No one is admitting that this story has affected them in any destructive way, but of course it would. You know, of course, if you're a Rusty van der Dussen or you're Aidan Markram, and you're thinking, yes, you know, like I'm a little out of touch, JP Germany, I'm not quite middling it, and we're not winning cricket matches because our batsmen aren't scoring enough runs. Well, what if AB was here? If you're Thabo Mbeki and you or Otis Gibson, and you're thinking, well, we've come here with a plan with our bowlers, we're a batsman short. Yes, I wish AB was here. I try to put it to someone else. If Cristiano Ronaldo retired just before the last World Cup and Portugal was struggling to score goals, of course, and then it turned out that Cristiano Ronaldo tried to get back into the Portugal side. Can you imagine the media storm then? AB de Villiers is a superstar batsman. AB de Villiers walks into this cricket team the way AB de Villiers walks into any cricket team currently playing in this World Cup. And I would challenge anyone who says otherwise. But the fact remains is that he did retire. Otis Gibson told us in the press the other day that even in December, when South Africa was playing, when it was the Mzansi Super League, Otis went to AB and said, are you done with this retirement nonsense? That was Otis's exact words. Are you done with this retirement nonsense? And AB assured him in early December, late November, that he wasn't, that he was happy with his decision, and that his retirement is final. So now Lloyd Bernard from News 24 put it really perfectly when he said that AB tried to board a ship that had already left the harbour, and I think that we have to respect CSA's decision. And it's just the only person who, I mean, no one looks good here, but AB really doesn't look good here. He looks like a guy who realizes his mistake after leaving a lover and now wants to try and make a phone call when that lover is in a new relationship. It's just not on. You know, it's just not on. And as much as we'd like to have him, and as much as I'm sure Fuck would like to have him and Otis would like to have him, he ain't here and they're going to make do without him.
No, fantastic. I think you've given me another headline, which says AB de Villiers admits retirement was rubbish.
Did I say that? You have to double check. I mean, if I said that, then I said that. I don't want to be like AB now, that it's like, oh, he said, she said.
Cool. Thank you so much. That's unbelievable, Dan. Thank you so much. Your insights have been absolutely awesome. You've gotten rave reviews from the guys that have listened to episode one of this podcast. And we clocked over 1,000 downloads on Iono FM alone just in 1 week. So that is just amazing. I think we're the first Tiso Blackstar podcast to do so. I do stand to be corrected. So a lot of that has to do with your amazing analysis, buddy.
Well, my pleasure. I can't take too much of that credit, but really happy to be involved in this project, and I can't wait to be back.
Awesome stuff. I did give you a heads up, though, on our upset of the week and playmaker of the week. So I'm sure you'll be ready for that. Yes. Your options for upset of the week were Pakistan beating England by 14 runs at the Oval, Edward Mutebi beating two-time defending champion Bongmusa Mthembu by 35 seconds to win the Comrades Marathon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an athletics fan, well, analyst rather. I mean, just competing in the Comrades Marathon is an achievement unto itself. But I got to go with Pakistan because I had England trouncing everybody in this tournament, maybe except for India. So I'm going to go with Pakistan on that one.
Ah, showing your cricket bias there, mate.
Yeah.
Your playmaker of the week, your options were Sheldon Cottrell's catch to remove Stephen Smith in the boundary, and Ashley Barty winning her first French Open title, Rafael Nadal winning his 12th Roland Garros title, and Thembi Kgatlana's goal against Spain in the FIFA Women's World Cup.
For me, it's a no-brainer. Rafa was great. Barty, congrats. Cottrell's catch was a stunner, but that goal that Kgatlana scored, oh my word, we watched it in real time. We were all, a few of the South African journalists were gathered in a pub, and we were all filing, and we were watching it on my laptop. And the way she managed to dig it out, I mean, the ball was so close to her body, but she still managed to kind of get that little, like digging motion, and she managed to just get it over the Spanish keeper's outstretched arm. I thought it was an absolute cracker. It sent us wild. It's a pity they couldn't bring it home. I mean, I feel like they were robbed with that second penalty decision. But no, for that first goal, you know, there's just nothing like it. It reminded you of Shabo's goal in 2010, where just an absolute cracker from nowhere against a side that on paper is better than South Africa. Yeah, man, that was special. So, as I say, just a pity they couldn't hold on for a result.
Fabulous stuff. Thank you so much, Daniel Gallen. That's Daniel Gallen chatting to us all the way from the UK. He is front and center at what is appearing to be a major, major train crash for the Proteas. Dan, thank you so much, buddy.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Right, and on to our second part of this episode. And like I said, we'll chat all things Springbok rugby. Most specifically, the center position that has everybody talking as it relates to the upcoming World Cup in Japan later this year. With me for this interesting chat is none other than Sino Kanto, who is a former Border Bulldogs and Free State Cheetahs fullback. But in recent years, he has been a skills coach, backline and defense coach with the Cheetahs. He's one of the most committed rugby people I have ever met. And his knowledge of the game is, shall I say, outstanding to say the least. He loves his skills aspect of the game, which some might say South Africa lags a little behind when it comes to the New Zealand All Blacks. And he's a guy I've known and met quite a few times in the rugby circles. Funny story regarding Sino, before I officially welcome him to the podcast, I was down in Fort Hare to do one of my covert interviews with a guy called Jerry Ngolo, who quit cricket at just the age of 27. And who do I see there? This is December. This is blazing heat. It's probably 35 degrees in Alice. And I'm at 410. I'm thinking, man, I'd rather be having a pint somewhere or having umqombothi, which is traditional beer. And, you know, and here I see Sino drilling three rugby players in the blazing heat, teaching them skills, getting them into condition. It's December, Baba. Welcome to the podcast, Sino. And tell us, why do you have to put kids through all that torture while they're on holiday?
Thanks a lot, and thanks for having me. December guys getting skilled and everything,
yeah,
it's something that I used to do for myself and try to get conditioned and still stay fit.
Yeah,
because when you actually get that break in December, it's not actually a break because you got this small time spent with your family.
Yeah,
but again, what pays your bills is important. And
was like the 21st or the 22nd.
I remember
in December, Baba. Like, people just want to go out to the beach. They want to go to Eastern Beach, you know, and have fun.
But you know, that thing actually works. And honestly, I actually took them to the beach as well, just for
yes, but not for fun. You made them do shuttles on sand
they were doing skills and doing some running on the water and stuff like that. But okay, look at one of those guys is actually in the World Cup now with the under 20.
I was
World
about
Cup.
To say Sanele Nohamba.
Sanele Nohamba is
I think he's the starting SA under 20s scrum off. Yeah,
yes.
And he's a Sharks product.
He's the Sharks, and he's actually in the Sharks Super Rugby team now, and which is actually good. We also with the Sharks that are putting these youngsters and giving them an opportunity.
Very good. Yeah,
that's what I like about that, because at the end of the day we need these guys to grow, and that's why I help them, because I want them to grow within their rugby. Oliver Zono, who's been with the Pro 14 Southern King,
right?
And one of the guys that also fell out of the under 20s is Lucky. He's also a scrum off, but again you've got him competing against Sanelli. When I have to share that information, like, you guys need to do this, you need to do this, but again it's like, who does it better?
And
which is, that's what
it's all
thing about
execution,
Sanelli.
I think,
because you know, in December we always play cricket as well around the 26th.
Of course, Amaqalekusha the main cricket tournament there, where the rural areas play against each other.
Exactly. And with Sanele, you play like 3 games a day, or 2 games a day. So me and Sanele, we used to go and play a game in the morning, and then we
a cricket game. Yeah, okay.
And then after the cricket game, we have our shuttles. Like, we do our hundreds. Say we do 10 hundreds, 8 sixties. So we just keep on doing that, and then we go and play another game. And then after the whole game, we would take a 3-kilometer run, and then we just chill for the rest of the day. Because again, you don't want him to lose that fitness. You don't want him to actually be leg down when he gets to the Sharks, because he needs to keep up. Because you've got your standards when you get to the unions. And us coaches, we always say, listen here, when you left here, you are doing this.
Yeah.
And then now you're here and it's not acceptable. But again, within that, we always give him that much time to break as well. Say, listen here, I want you to recover. You're only going to play one game today.
Okay.
And just recover as well.
Now, you've worked with not just the young boys. Occasionally, the likes of Springboks, Lukanyo Arm, as well as Makazole Mapimpi, occasionally they come to you to touch up on a few of their skills. Talk to us about that.
No, we are the... I spoke to Arm, but he couldn't make it as well.
Oh, right.
Last December, because he wanted to join us. And he's like, hey, Buddha, I need to come and join you. I need to come and do your skills, because you don't want to get carried away and go and have too much fun. Because, again, at the end of the day, this is what pays your bills. This is your life. So you need to keep up, and then you still need to maintain where you're at. So I had the chat with the guys, and I've been doing so. Like, guys like Abongile, when he moved to Bloemfontein.
Abongile Nongotwana,
I did some reaction skills with him at the gym, and all this stuff, because you are staying at my place. And I said, listen, yeah, let's go to gym and
show him
some of the stuff, do some skills. So I love skills, and that's...
Yeah, I know this.
I love skills, and I'm always open to learn. I chat with the guys from New Zealand as well, at the Crusaders, so they always
win. Yeah, yeah.
But the nicer thing about them is that they never give me anything.
Okay.
But we chat.
All right.
So when we chat, that's when I get to pick up the stuff they do. I share with them what I do. They will share what they do. And then that's when I like, okay, this one is also same thing that I do, but I can polish it this way.
Okay.
Because those guys are advanced. They more advanced when
they are way ahead. Now you were mentored by Dave Williams, that he's at the Sharks now. He's a skills coach. Tell us about that relationship.
You know, I remember Dave coming to the Cheetahs, and no one, Dave was like this quiet guy. He's like walking around, doesn't say much. I actually went to him because he got us at the Cheetahs. So I went to him, introduced myself. I'm Sino Gantu, and this is what I do. And we started chatting from there. And we had that relationship, and then I started talking about myself. I never asked him about what he does and everything. I started talking about myself as a skills coach.
This is what I do.
And this is what I do. Started showing him video clips. And then he opened up. And then when he opened up, he's like, I actually like what you're doing because it's more of what I like.
Okay.
So we started chatting more. We started chatting more skill stuff and some of the stuff that I showed my guys with the cheaters, they're like, nah. And then I'm like, okay, my easier way out for these things to be done in the cheaters is to chat to Dave.
Right. And what did Dave sort of, how did he help you sort of get your direction as a skills coach? Because you did a lot of things at the cheaters, not just skills. You did defense, you did backline, you know, you worked with various levels from under 19, under 21, seniors and back, you know. So you were kind of moving around. So you got a little bit of taste of everything, fortunately or unfortunately. But how did Dave then sort of focus the skills part of your repertoire?
Because Dave's focus most of the times is like, he showed me how to break it down, like the game plan.
Yeah.
So that's the nicest thing about when you see, this is what the head coach wants. And then we start looking at like, okay, even at practice wise, this is how we're going to practice. We start breaking it down. If you've got your port and you've got three guys are playing there, how do you get this guy away? And then the guy at the back who's going to get that ball in. You know, the communication part as well, because I think the skills are actually more done with more communication. If you don't communicate, you'll never get that end result.
Right.
So he showed me lots of things, and he also, some of the videos that we shared, I showed him my videos.
Yeah.
And then he showed me my video. And then I remember this one time we had a conversation on how can we get the props to be better. And
that's possibly why you get the oxen chairs and the Trevor Nyakanis that can also jam a bit, you
exactly.
know. Like,
so now what we did is that we went to look at the rugby league,
okay?
Because you know they've got they never always wanting to spin past the ball, and you know. So we went to look how do these guys get this thing done? Look, this pass is like push a pass with like a wrist pass. So what we did is this: we said, If the props, most of the times they spend more time, and I always said we work in 3 seconds.
Okay.
So when I say we work in 3 seconds, that 3 seconds the defense is coming up the line, because look at the Crusaders when they defend, they come off the line
less like, than way less than
exactly.
3 seconds.
Exactly. So
now,
to the Crusaders, if you're gonna catch the ball as a prop, catch it, try and fix it, what are you gonna do most of the times? When you try and fix it and bring it closer to your body, no, you're gonna go and bash. That's the first thing you're gonna do. Boom, you're gonna go bash.
If you don't spill it.
So now what we said, because we want the game to flow.
Yeah.
So instead of catching, fixing, and then you wanna turn and pass.
Yeah.
So what me and Dave did, we went to look at the rugby league passes. And then from there, it's just a catch and pass.
Oh, it's the catch and pass in one movement.
In one
don't
movement.
Catch, try
don't
to
catch,
control it and put it under your arm first.
Yes.
Ah, right.
Because
so
now,
as you a split second,
we work in the split second. We'll calculate, and then we call it the 6 o'clock pass because it's got this one movement.
6 o'clock pass. Okay.
Get this one movement that keeps on going like this. So when you pass, it's got like that 6 o'clock movement.
Okay.
So that's what we did. And then something that I was also taught in New Zealand, we always say beggar hands. So every time you catch a ball, it's like you're eating a beggar. So, this is that. So now, if you catch a ball
instead
like
of beggar heads with your hands low, don't beg.
Like eating a beggar.
It's like you're eating a beggar.
Burger.
Okay.
So now you get your hands out there.
Yeah.
So if you catch a ball like that, like with your open hands like this, it's easy for you to just flip it this way. But at the end, your pinkies are the one who's gonna finish the movement.
Right, so your pinkies must
so
be
you
solid
like
at the end of your wrist movement.
Exactly.
Right,
so
I get you.
Those are the things that we focus
but
on.
But you're teaching guys like Oxen Chair, like Trevor Nyakani. These are like hard men of the front row. And you're teaching them to use soft hands, basically.
Exactly.
And it didn't backfire.
No, it never backfired.
Certainly, we've seen how Ox plays.
The nice thing about Ox, I've been working with Ox and all those other guys since Under-21.
Yeah.
Ox and Che, even some of the guys that have left the Cheetahs when I was with the Super Rugby. I used to work a lot with Raymond Rule. Guys like Sergio Peterson. With the step and go. And everyone was like, yes, Sergio is scoring lots of tries. Because one thing about me is that I always want to focus on those smaller things that
the
head coaches, I understand, because that we want to win the game. But again, his concern is more of the game plan.
The
guys we must execute. We must get a line out there and all that.
Right. Now, earlier we said that we will unpack the Springbok center conversation. Our best centers in Super Rugby this year have been Lukanyo Am from the Sharks, as well as Jesse Creel from the Bulls. They've both shown incredible form and hunger for the try line. I've always been curious as to whether the two can play together as a center pairing, and we'll get into that. With Am playing as the first center and Creel playing at second center. Before I get Sino Ganto's thoughts on this, let's hear what Jesse Creel had to say regarding this wonderful little competitive rivalry between him and Lukanyo Am.
Right, talking rugby, what a season you guys have had. Yourself specifically speaking about positions, but I want to talk about something that a lot of people have been, you know, playing around in the back of their minds. The fact that we've got two world-class number 13s in yourself and Lukanyo Am. How would you feel about playing with Lukanyo Am, with him at the inside center and you on the outside?
Yeah, bro, so obviously this question, they asked me early on in the year with SA Rugby about Lukanyo and I, bro, and the thing is, I think what people don't understand is, bro, like, we talk often, you know, we're good mates, we want each other to do well. It's so exciting, like you say, that there's two players playing at Super Rugby that were playing at a good level that can teach each other things, that can help each other to grow, and in the end of the day we just want the same thing, and that's for the Springboks to do well and to win rugby games, you know. So that sounds quite exciting. I've heard about that. We've obviously got a lot of other world class 12s at the Springboks, so you never know, but I think it is important for all of us to be versatile and be able to play more than one position. So
have you been excited by the way he plays and vice versa? Has he been impressed by the way you play in your conversations?
Yeah, I think I played both of the games against the Sharks.
Yeah.
So we got a good shot against each other, which was nice. Obviously, you learn a lot from playing against a guy that's really good, and you prepare well. So I think he's been playing really well for the Sharks. I think when he plays, a guy like Mapimpi and Spoo and those guys come into the game a lot more, you know.
Yeah,
so I think that's been pretty exciting. And then I think it's been a good season.
Right now, Sino, Jesse Creel, Lukanyo Am. Am, as you would know, played inside center, coming up at border, got to the Sharks, moved to outside, and I think this year, I think the influence of Dave Williams, the influence of Ricardo Lobsha, who is a center, by the way, and I keep saying this, Ricardo Lobsha was a center at EP. Mm. Him and Dion Kayser were the center combination at EP before they were both taken out to the wings. But anyway, those were the dark days of rugby, where you couldn't be anything other than a wing. Now, they're both there, and you can obviously see the impact that those two coaches have had on the likes of Lukanyo Am, and I'll add Makazole Mapimpi, I'll add Sbu Nkosi, I'll add Karen Bosch, who's just excelled, Apelele Fassi. Like, they, for me, they've got like stallions in that back line. But I want to focus on specifically Creel and Am. Do you see them playing together, not at Springbok level and at the World Cup more specifically?
I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah.
Because I think, with the flair that Lukanyo Am's got, and he's got a nice step. I said I focus on lots of stuff, like smaller stuff. He's got a nice step and go.
Yeah.
He's got these backdoor passes.
Offload,
The offloads. And for me, I think even if you will have to take it up, he's always the guy that will always try and attack the weak shoulder. He's not going to come and bash it up like other centers will do, which is, I won't mention name.
So yeah, we all know who the bashers are in rugby.
So yeah. I think with today's rugby, and like with me being a skills coach, and I think I'll have them together, because Creel is running so much good lines where he could just comes out nice and short at times.
Yeah.
He's got a nice step and go and with the drift passes that you can hit up on him. So, and you kind of, lots of guys, I mean, if you can have that little bit of flair with Magazole, who's one of the best wings at the moment.
Best finisher for me in the country.
Exactly.
Right now.
So, right now, he's playing great rugby.
Yeah.
I remember even when he was at the Cheetahs, he was always trying to improve and trying to be that better player.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is now, he's taking it to another level. And again, I can say this with so much confidence that he's got his father there, Dave Williams.
Right, okay. Yeah.
There's no man that loves Mapimpi
more than Dave Williams.
I can bet you on that one. So he's got his father there, and which is, he's got more confidence. This guy, he knows his game plan and he backs his skills. And again, if you have, with me as a coach, and I have players that will back my skills and everything that I said, look at the guy who's playing now, who was starting at the Junior World Cup, James Molense.
Mm.
He's one of the players that comes from the under-19s, and I had the privilege of working with him.
Yeah.
And when I say, Jimmy, my boy, this is what you do. He always trusted my everything I said. So that now, when I watch him at the SA under 20, I was like, you know what, God is great because we see these boys.
Yeah.
But with that flair, with my with the Creel as well as 12-13, I think the box will have a great flair of rugby.
I think so, but a lot of people are also advocating for maybe Andre Pollard to shift to his outside to second 5-8 with maybe an Alton, maybe a Cohen Bosch, maybe a Damon Willems. We don't know, as the 10. How would you see Andre at 12? Awkward silence.
Look, I think now and then he does it, he's one of the guys that will put us on the front foot and as one of the decision makers in the game. But I think my starting lineup would be maybe him at 10,
Him
at 10, and then Lucanio and Creel.
Okay.
At 13.
No consideration to an Esther Hazen or Damien Dialende.
Esther Hazen, I would consider.
You'd consider Esther Hazen. Why Esther Hazen and not Dialende?
And again, as much as he's the big guy, he's got some flair. He's got some great hands. And again, with the influence of the Sharks having David Williams, will focus on the skills. I think he has improved, and he's very big. I remember we played against him, and I had Nicole Lee and Steph with the under-21s, and we played against this kid. But again, he's so flippin' strong. And
Nicole is like Francois Fenter 2.0. Yeah. Like skillful, but hard as well in midfield.
So when Osterhazen came on and then like, guys, we're playing semifinals against the Sharks. And, you know, we knew it. When I had to go and plan my back line, I was like, we in for a good show. And again, I said to Nicole, my boy, only thing I need from you
is
stay on his face the whole day.
The entire
I went to analyze him, everything, how he passes the ball, how he kicks.
Yeah.
And for now, he improved a lot from that. But I will consider him as well.
Cool. Now, another one of my curveballs, Damien Willemse. I think he's been so badly mismanaged, right? But that's just another conversation. I don't think he'll make box at fullback. He hasn't had enough games at fly half for the Stormers this year to even compete, right? And Cohen's now come out of the blue and stolen form from everybody else. Should we try him as a backup inside? He's got the build, certainly has the skills.
Look, skill-wise, he does.
Inside center as a 12.
skill-wise, he does. And, for me, let's try and compare him with Ma'anonu Sonibel Williams in the middle.
I think he can give a good account of himself there. I think so. Well,
I don't know. I always see the boy as, I think he's one of those guys that, listen, I just want my time. Like, I want to be free before I do everything.
There's no time.
Rather give him at fullback and at 10, but for 12, no. I'd rather have Pollard.
Okay, let's look quickly. Let's look beyond the 2019 World Cup. Mm. And let's look at the fullbacks at the Chelsea. Kobe is still young. Apelele Fassi, who is a thoroughbred, athleticism-wise, he's top of the pops. And then you've got Warrick Haaland, who is an all-rounder, probably a starter next year in the Springboks, is Warrick Haaland. And then you want to put Damian Willems in that conversation with those three. I don't know.
Not at 12.
That's just at 15. At 12, 12 is wide open. 12 is wide open.
But I wouldn't put him there. I don't think I would put him at 12.
Would you put him at 10, rather?
Yes.
I don't know.
Rather, he must... You've got,
so you want him to fight it out at 10 with probably Kerwin Bosch? Henry's still around. Elton, I don't know if Elton's going to be around after this. Yeah.
He's got an opportunity there at 10. Fullback? Nope. 12? No, I don't give him.
You wouldn't give him a chance at 12?
I'll back Oosthuizen in any day as well as
okay.
a backup on those guys on Lucanio Armand.
Before you can start Jesse looking at a Damian Willems.
I'll back up the
okay. The guy. We need to get someone who will agree with me on this.
And
podcast.
then again, you still have Nico Lee.
You do still have Nico Lee.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe we need to look more at the Pro 14 guys. That's
another thing. You still have Nico Lee. That will be your guy. And Nico Lee's got some great decision making.
Yeah, cool. We have to wrap up our chat on with Sino Kando on the Sports Live podcast. It's been absolutely great. Like, I love chatting rugby, and we could talk about this all day. But I think we need to get someone who will agree with me on Damian Willems at 12. But since we're not getting that today, we have to wrap up our chat. Thank you so much, brother. Thanks for coming in. This is the Sports Live podcast.
No, thank you very much.
That's it from me, Sibongi Jikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.